It's definitely a bird. It's Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast where we cause the earth to turn back just a bit so we can reflect on the things we've ingested. And today, the object of our reflection is the character and stories of Superman since his creation in 1938 by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster in light of the new James Gunn film, Superman. I'm Mark Linsenmeyer, and I also look different with glasses.
I'm Al Baker, the original, the best.
I'm Sarah Lynn Bruck, the greatest criminal mind on earth. Soon you will all do my bidding.
This is Lawrence Ware, and Superman is a defender of truth, justice, and the American way, but he's an alien. How does that work?
He's an illegal alien.
I know. It could be the UK way. I don't understand Superman at all.
Yeah, in the new film, does he say, and the American way? What does that entail? Is it capitalism?
He does not.
He does not. They stopped saying the American way in, I think, the 80s. That was dropped from the official Superman credo.
Was that the 80s?
I think it was the 70s or the 80s. But like,
I never understood. I never understood how an alien can say he's defending the American way, but he's also involved in other stuff. And also,
better Superman than Elon Musk.
Are we sure about that? They're both aliens.
Yes.
And that really is, in many ways, is the key question at the heart of James Gunn's new film, is immigrants versus Elon Musk.
Jump right into the political aspect.
Yeah, and I just watched Man of Steel, finished it up this morning, and likewise was having the, well, if we can't control you, if you're more powerful than our entire military, well, we should probably just put you down, right? Power will be abused eventually.
How do they put him down? They can't put Superman down.
Kryptonite.
He saves a couple of them, and then they're like, you know what?
You're okay.
This man is our friend. We'll stop trying to murder him.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie, man. I love that Man of Steel, man. It's just something about it. I know it's problematic. It's not politically what Superman would have done, but man, I love that movie so much. It just has a special place in my heart.
Well, let's go around. So what, Lawrence, tell us more about your background with the man.
I mean, I'm a big comic book person, a little bit more Marvel than DC, but I've read comic books for many, many years, and so I know Superman very well. I've read All-Star Superman. I've read all that stuff, man. I've read the most recent Superman run, Absolute Superman. So, I mean, I'm a big Superman fan. I've loved all the movies. I've seen all of them. I really, really enjoy the first one and appreciate the first one, but it was a little too dated for my taste. And so I never really latched on to that one. It just never really, like, I like it, and I like Christopher Reeves, but I never latched on to that one. But nevertheless, I know Superman very well, have seen all the movies multiple times, even the bad one with Richard Pryor, seen that one multiple times. So I'm a big Superman fan, man. Really, really big Superman fan. I've always written for this guy, and I love Superman, even though I kind of don't understand him in some ways.
Sarah, you're my age, so you... I saw this at two different birthday parties in the theater. This was probably the first film I saw twice in the theater. Yeah, what was your background with this?
Probably similar. I mean, Christopher Reeve is my homeboy. He's my Superman. I mean, I didn't, you know, do a deep dive or anything like that as a kid. I loved the movies. I think I have a special place in my heart even for Superman 3. But I especially love the second one. The second one, I had to do a rewatch for this podcast because I just love that movie so much. I was actually reminded of how great this current version of Superman is because of the tone. They got the tone just right. And the tone really came from that first Superman movie where there is a very high degree of earnestness that's mixed in with humor. And I just so appreciate that. I like this latest version of Superman a lot. And a lot of it was because of that. I like the version that came before it, but I wasn't really too into it. I watched it for this podcast, Man of Steel. I didn't watch it when it came out at the time. I watched it for this podcast. So the first Superman for me, Christopher Reeve version, was my Superman, and I remember it fondly. And even now today, when I went back to watch the second one again, it still really holds up.
I think Al's going to have the long answer. So let me give the end of mine, which is yes, but apart from that, that was my introduction as a comics person, which, you know, I didn't really start reading comics till after grad school, and I haven't spent that much time with Superman. I don't find him as innately interesting. A lot more with Batman, a lot more with Marvel stuff. I like the idea. I like what happens when there's absolute power, the narrative challenges that that introduces, but also the various anti-stories, the boys, these alternate history. I think that the Sentry in the latest Marvel thing was also a Superman iteration, though they sort of de-emphasized that. They emphasized more the problems with his gift. But we ended up putting this off a little bit. So in addition to rewatching Superman 1, which I really enjoyed, I didn't discover the 3-hour cut until after I'd rewatched the first one. Did anybody see that?
Sure did. Well, obviously, I own that one, yeah. Yeah.
The 3 hours, mm-hmm. the one that I watch, yeah.
Is it worth it?
It's not worth it.
Okay.
It really isn't, but I still enjoy it, though.
It puts more of the bad parts of the movie in the movie. All the best stuff in the movie is in the...
sure. was very intrigued. I had never gotten around to watch the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2, which came out in 2006, that he was the original director of the film, and he directed Superman 1, and so I thought this would be a more pure version. We can talk a little about that, so I ended up like watching his cut and then sort of fast forwarding through the other one to see how it was different. And I don't know that it was actually any better having the scenes with Marlon Brando back in, which they had cut out of the original theatrical release because he got, per his deal with Superman 1, a percentage of the box office. And they're like, that's too much. It did too well. So we're going to remove you entirely from Superman 2. But, you know, the person, his mom that they got to do those lines, it was fine. But, you know, how could you not want Marlon Brando giving Lois Lane the stink eye? That was beautiful. Did get around to watching the fan film, the Bryan Singer fan film that was Superman Returns. I remember really liking that at the time.
That's a little harsh. The fan film, it's a legitimate film, man. Come on.
But it is. No, it's not fan film in terms of being amateurish or something like that.
Yeah. That's the implication. Okay. Go ahead.
He's latching on to the Richard Donner vision.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, that this Brandon Routh version of Superman is supposed to be Christopher Reeve, you know, and they really got the spitting image. There were other issues with that, but yeah, so that was fun.
That was fun. That was terrible. That's a terrible movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's a terrible movie. It was not a good movie
all right,
at all.
Well, we can get into it. Man of Steel is hard for me to watch again because of just all the Zack Snyder stench and the different things that now I've come to associate with him.
Oh, we're going to fight
after
today.
The Rebel Moon movies, his grittiness and his particular sensibility. But I really liked it at the time, and there are definitely elements about it. And I think it's what superhero movies needed at that time. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the new one is what superhero movies need at this time. I liked it perfectly fine. Go ahead, Al. Tell us about all the comics that would have...
Give us your dissertation, Al. Let's go.
So the dissertation is going to be drip fed through the episode, but I'm going to start by saying that Superman is my favorite superhero, and he's my favorite superhero for very, very particular reasons. And I think he's basically one of the most interesting pop culture characters ever since the history of pop culture. And I really, really love this new movie. I hope we talk a bunch about it, but let me just talk about my history with Superman. So my first exposure to Superman will have been the Dean Cain TV show. What was it? The Adventures of Lois and Clark?
Yeah.
That was your first introduction to Superman?
Yeah. Wow. I watched that religiously. And
yeah.
One of the interesting things about Superman, just to start us off with, is I think he is a character who has worked far better in almost any medium other than big screen blockbuster.
Yes, cinema. Absolutely right. Absolutely.
Like on TV, he's great. Almost every single Superman TV show has been hugely successful, you know, varying quality, but you know, for what it was, Smallville was fantastic. For what it was, the Dean Cain Superman show was absolutely fantastic. Even the recent CW Superman show has been really, really terrific.
I agree completely.
But where Superman really has really shone has been in animation. So the New Adventures of Superman and Superman's appearances through the Justice League cartoon, the Justice League Unlimited cartoon, and the absolutely stellar library of DC straight-to-video animated movies, which are almost all just light years better than they have any right to be.
I completely agree.
And even at their worst, are really, really entertaining. So for me, I guess one thing to say is that for me, the movies are some of the Superman media that I have the least connection with. So I read, you know, a bunch of the famous comic storylines, and like I enjoy Superman serialized stories, less than the big kind of event comics, because I think he's more suited to that kind of storytelling. But really, the cartoons and the animated movies are where I get my huge love for him from. But the reason Superman became and has kind of remained my favorite is because, like everyone in my generation, I started off liking Batman, and I had all the usual reasons to like Batman. Like, he's interesting because he doesn't have any powers. He's a bit gritty. He's like the opposite of Superman, essentially. But then that kind of take through the 90s and the 2000s got kind of boring very quickly, and I started getting more interested in the more kind of fantastic and fabulous side of DC Comics. So firstly, Green Lantern, I got really into the space opera stuff. And then through that, Justice League, and then through that, Superman. And I found myself realizing, well, firstly, it's interesting that Superman is like is the original superhero, the prototype superhero. And so every other superhero is, in a very important sense, a reaction to Superman, has to define themselves by not being Superman, which puts Superman in a really fascinating position to be able to tell meta stories about superheroes and heroism in a way that nobody else can. Similar to that, he just has access to a whole bunch of particular kinds of stories that not only no other superhero, but no other character in the canon has access to. So whereas, I mean, one way I've put this before is, with any other superhero, the story can be like, is this character going to be able to defeat this bad guy? But with Superman, Superman is always going to win. He is always the most powerful person in any story. So you immediately remove, kind of, when done well, you've removed one of the possibilities for lazy storytelling just from the arsenal of the writer. You have to assume that Superman is always going to be able to win. So then you have to tell a story about what way he wants to win, or what are the consequences of his winning, or like what he decides he's going to do. And that just makes for better stories. And that's why Superman's my favorite, because my view is like, he's the original and he is the best. And he has access to all these stories that no other character has access to. And I love him. That's my essay.
That's beautiful, Al. That's beautiful, Al.
That
seriously,
there's lots of things that mirror strength and physics defying ability to like lift things with no counter force. You can just boost from the air. Screw inertia. But like, yes, in Superman Returns, he's trying to stop a plane that is going down. And I think just like, well, what part of the plane do I grab on exactly? It's like falling into pieces. Like, I feel like there's mechanical skill. He has to have lightning fast analytical skill. In Man of Steel, there's so much like just the city is falling down. Like what, which in that they just said, well, he just can't save everybody. That's okay. He just saves a few people.
Just to get straight into something that I don't like about Man of Steel, and there's plenty of, like, I don't have the hatred for it that a lot of people do, but one of the reasons why that just seems silly to me is that if you're telling a Superman story, you just have to start from the position that he could do whatever he wants. It's a Superman movie. If Superman wants to save everybody without causing enormous amounts of collateral damage, Superman can do that because he's Superman. And that's where, like, the gritty take on Superman really feels like it misses the point to me in a very serious way, because the premise of Superman is, he doesn't have to be gritty. He can do anything.
Oh, man. Okay, let's get into this thing. All right. So here's the reason why I think people misunderstand that film is because, on the one hand, that film is responding to Batman, to the Batman films, the trilogy that Christopher Nolan did.
Yeah,
Christopher Nolan made a very grounded, gritty Batman. And so they're trying to create a Superman that's in that kind of world, if you will. And so I do think that trying to make a Superman film that is in conversation, I don't even know, like, just in conversation with those films, it is weird. I will admit that it's weird. But I always read that Superman film as a film about a Superman who has not yet developed his moral code yet. He has not yet figured out this is what he wants to do. Like, it's there. You see it's there. But he hasn't figured out how to actualize that idea that is kind of innate within him. That's how I read those films. And so all the crazy things that are happening within that film and the earth-shattering buildings falling stuff has to do with him kind of beginning to understand who he is and beginning to understand how to be that guy. That's how I read it. That's how I read those films. And so that's why I kind of really enjoy them. And I completely disagree with Mark. Man, I love Zack Snyder-isms. Like, Watchmen, 300, Day of the Dead. Like, I just like his, or is it Dawn of the Dead? I think it's Dawn of the Dead. Anyway, I just like
his style.
Yeah, I like his style. And I like the way he films things. Like, he is very interesting and very kind of forward thinking. And also, the design of the ships are just top notch. I just enjoy those things. And so I just kind of disagree, man. I don't want to go into a debate about this because this is something that has been raging online for the past few weeks ever since Superman came out. I don't want to get into that. It's just that I just really enjoy those films. I think those films have a lot to kind of bring to the discussion. And if you divorce yourself from those earlier Superman films, you can kind of see there's something interesting that's going on there. Even though you may not necessarily like the direction, you can at least appreciate what he's trying to do there.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think that that is a reflection of, because that's kind of the heart of the Superman story anyway, is how is he going to use his powers? When is it appropriate? Mm-hmm. And you see those questions being asked in the Tim Kuhn version as well, just in a different way. And I wonder if it's just because, again, it's a reflection of our time. You know, the Zack Snyder movies were definitely of a time. And I have a feeling that the Tim Gunn movie as well, you know, and I really liked it a lot, but I still think it's going to be of its time. And I think those Richard Donner versions are also of a time. As much as I love them and as much as I see that as my Superman, I recognize that it is definitely late 70s, early 80s aesthetic, as well as all of the things as far as what we were thinking of at the time and how he was going to be using those powers, that was very much relegated during that era.
The Zack Snyder Superman is unfortunate because it's a very, very specific take on Superman, which comes from Frank Miller's Batman stories. So it's a take on Superman, which is ultimately grounded in Batman. And you can see the story of how it happens just from the studio's point of view, because you have a flop Superman movie in Superman Returns, then you have some wildly successful Batman movies, and you're like, okay, Batman is now the template for the DC universe. And so you get Zack Snyder in, and that all makes sense. But in every other part of the DC universe, where the characters all work well together, Batman is the aberration, and he works well because he's the aberration. He's the little dark, gloomy cloud in the corner of this bright, colorful universe, and everyone loves him because he's the exception. But then if you're trying to create like the whole DC universe in Batman's image, it feels kind of wrong because you're turning every superhero into Batman. And not only is not every superhero Batman, but you lose part of what makes Batman special as well.
I'm willing to say we're going to have a future Zack Snyder episode and we can debate the aesthetics of his spaceships and things at that point.
We should, because he's really interesting.
But there are narrative things that instead of just his father has a heart attack, it's a conscious choice that Kevin Costner is like, I'm about to be killed by a tornado. I know you could run over and save me, but you might give yourself away. So let me die. Mm-hmm. You know, that is a variation on the Spider-Man seeing Uncle Ben die, the Batman seeing his father die. Like, it's not quite the same thing because it's not a menace, but it is a, yeah. What did you think of that choice? Like, it seems, yeah, it's is he going to be selfish and protect himself, or is he going to step out and expose himself to the world and reap the consequences?
It's one of the only parts of the Superman origin story that new tellers of that story kind of have at their disposal to change, is like the way that his, like the details of his relationship with his adopted parents. And this is, again, one of the interesting, sorry to bring it back to Snyder again, but it's really revealing that in Man of Steel, John Kent tells Clark, like, you're special and people are going to try and tell you not to be special, but you've got to remain being bad. And like, that's the lesson. That's the kind of emotional origin setup that Zack Snyder is going for with Superman. And in this one, it's very clearly just like selflessness, I guess. Or it's like, it's a very useful tool to set up the themes of the Superman that you're going for. And in this one, that very cleanly sets up, like, you need to tread carefully. You need to keep your identity, like, you need to blend in, you need to pass, right? And also the kind of self-sacrificing element of it. So yeah, it seems like it set up the themes that it needed to.
I mean, the thing about Superman, and this might start a fight with me and Al, but the reason why he is not one of my favorite superheroes, in fact, he's not even in the top 10 for me, is because, like, how do you tell an interesting, compelling story about a man who is relatively all-powerful. He is a god among men, and he is incredibly boring. Like, just incredibly boring as a human being. I like injustice stuff. Like, I like when Superman kind of flirts with being dark and... But, like, this Superman, he's a Boy Scout that's all-powerful. Like, that is probably the reason why a lot of these superhero films don't work and why the serialized storytelling does work. Because for a two-hour, 30-minute movie, you have, you know, a limited amount of time to set up this character, to create the conflict, and to do it in a compelling way, right? Zack Snyder was able to do that. Regardless of how you think he treated the Superman character, he was able to do that. The James Gunn film was, I mean, we haven't talked much about this film. We can get into it. I like it, but it was able to do it, kind of. Mm-hmm. But it's really incredibly hard. It is a difficult storytelling kind of assignment to try to tell a compelling story about a character like this.
You're right.
That is so powerful, that is so dull, that wears hypno glasses, by the way, Mark. That's the reason why he is, you can't tell who he is when he's wearing glasses, because he's wearing hypno glasses.
I don't like the hypno glasses.
But it doesn't matter. It is a part of the storytelling. That's the reason why you can't tell who he is. But nevertheless, right, side note, people who are like, hey, man, they can't tell who Superman is because he's wearing these glasses. They don't know Superman. They don't know anything about this, you know, this storytelling. Get the hell out of here with that. Anyway, back to the point. The point is, it is very hard to tell a story like this in a kind of limited time frame. Like, in a single book, it'd be hard to tell a story about a person like this. In a film, it's very hard to tell a good, compelling story about a person like this. And that's the reason why I never really kind of attach myself to him. He just doesn't speak to me. I mean, all powerful, like, I need some kind of weakness outside of kryptonite. Like, give me something else. And that's the reason why I kind of always struggled with this guy.
I totally get that. But what I find really interesting about him placed in our world, you have somebody who is sort of quote unquote perfect. He is, you know, incredibly strong. He is the strongest person on earth. He has this innate sense of responsibility, and that conflict that he faces, his responsible self in conflict with our imperfect earth and our imperfect humanity, is, I think, what makes it really interesting. And I also think that's what makes every single iteration of Superman really political. Everybody says, oh, he's not political. He's not. Yes, he is. He absolutely is. That sense of responsibility that he has, he is supposedly the person that we are supposed to look up to. This is who we aspire to be, whereas none of us are. And there's a good reason for that, because it's impossible to be that person in the world that we live in.
Absolutely. All those kinds of themes are why Superman is great. But Lawrence, you are absolutely right that, especially if your main point of contact with Superman is the movies, it is really hard. It's really hard to tell a good story about, like, someone who has perfect qualities, because you just don't have most of the materials that you usually need to make a compelling character arc. But I don't think that's because there aren't good stories to tell. That I just think we happen to have not had the right people to tell the stories, arguably since Richard Donner. I want to talk a bit about the James Gunn movie, because I think it's really interesting. I think the James Gunn movie is the best Superman movie that we now have, the best live-action Superman movie that we now have.
Why do you think that? I'm curious.
But it's nowhere near perfect. So the reason I love it is because it's Superman, it's recognizably Superman, it's a really good time, it's a really good fun movie. Essentially, the Richard Donner one is just too old to enjoy, just hasn't aged well enough to actually be enjoyed all the way through.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Even though Christopher Reeve is...
He's so good.
Great.
Absolutely has the claim to be the best Superman. Like, we were talking about the glasses thing. Like, I will never get sick of seeing that scene where he just shows how by carrying himself differently, he absolutely is a different guy.
That's it's a show, don't tell moment.
Just is brilliant. It's perfect. And he is the perfect Superman. But everyone else who's played Superman has also, I think, been great. Henry Cavill was a great Superman.
Okay, come on. Brandon Routh? Come on, man.
I thought he was perfectly fine.
No, he was not. He was terrible.
He was what spoiled that movie. Let me put it that way.
That's not what spoiled it, but, like, come on. There's a reason why this guy, like, got demoted to the CW. Come on, man.
But it's not like we haven't had, like, a Batman variety in character quality. And one of the reasons I think the new Superman movie isn't perfect is that ultimately, I was really hopeful about a James Gunn Superman movie, but after having watched it, I think James Gunn might have just not been the right guy to make a Superman movie.
Oh, wow.
Because his stock in trade is ensemble pieces, mm-hmm. and he's written an ensemble movie with Superman in it, and Superman is kind of the least interesting part of his own movie. That was kind of noticeable for me. But also, it's because I think if you're going to do a Superman movie really well, you really have to get into the internals of Superman. You have to conjure up some kind of enormous internal struggle that can kind of guide the emotional character of the movie, because the emotional arc of the movie is never going to be, can Superman do it? It has to be, what will Superman do?
Completely agree.
And in an ensemble piece, the action of the film comes from people reacting from one another, and that's not like the same kind of story. I think James Gunn's Justice League movie is going to be absolutely phenomenal when he comes to make it, but I'm not sure that he's the right guy. And like Lanterns, I'm super excited about, having seen Superman, but I'm not sure if he was the guy to make a real, like, character-focused story.
Hmm.
Maybe an initial thing, though, for any superhero movie, I think it works better if this is a freak one-occurrence event. And this is what... Mm. I'm not sure how much the original Superman movie relied on this, but pretty much. And that's what... Oh, a man who can fly. Like, well, if lots of men can fly... then why is this? This should be a miracle. And in fact, I didn't remember this whole, and I give unto you my only son, that they said that multiple times in the original movie, that it's, you're pouring on the religious thing a little thick. Yes, as opposed to how can Superman live in a world with other superheroes? And I think it's the same thing with like X-Men. There was something cool about, like, oh, mutants are, that is the thing that could make people magic. Not how are we going to fit X-Men in a world that has Avengers and has Fantastic Four and have all the, you know, so they're going to, Marvel's going to face a similar thing of how to keep this magical. But I think given that, you know, we're taking on the premise of, 1,000 years ago, they say at the beginning of the movie, the first metahumans were born.
300 years ago. Yeah, 300 years, 30 years, 3 years, or something like that.
Yeah, given that that was the challenge, I thought that this was a perfectly fun and fine way of doing that. And I like the ensemble cast and the wacky. I think this does what you were saying, Al, with gives this the bright glowing world of all this crazy stuff going on, including that great gag of... Oh yeah, they're fighting outside the window, but like they got it handled. This, you know, and they just let that go on and on.
I love the chemistry actually between Superman and Lois Lane in this latest movie.
They were really good.
I thought, oh yeah, those two, they're sleeping together. I believe it.
I wish that the movie had just been more about that and less about enjoying Nathan Fillion in a week, however wonderful that might have been.
He was pretty funny, but yeah. And Mr. Terrific,
I completely disagree, man. I disagree. If it was just Superman and Lois, this film would have fallen flat. Like, this film needed Nathan Fillion. It needed Mr. Terrific. Like, it needed Hawk Girl. Because James Gunn, I'm trying to think of a film where he legitimately did a single character kind of study that wasn't an ensemble piece. Like, even Super is kind of an ensemble piece, right? And so I just don't think that James Gunn, I think, Al, you might have been onto something. I don't think James Gunn was the right filmmaker to make a film about Superman. Now, he, in an underhanded kind of way, makes this an ensemble piece kind of film. But there's a reason why Mr. Terrific, like, jumps off the screen and is probably one of the best characters in this film.
Yes.
And Superman is fine. He's good. But he's not very memorable for me in this film, right? It's Mr. Terrific. It's Nathan Fillion in that weird wig. Like, and the weird character that Nathan Fillion plays, like, that's interesting. What's going on there is interesting. And I think that, Al, what you said clarified for me what's going on here, is because what's interesting about Superman is the internal struggle that he's having and how that plays out in the real world. And it's very hard to do that in a two and a half hour film that has to dedicate 30, 45 minutes to action. This is very hard to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what I want, I'll never get it. What I want is just a very minimal action character study. Like, that's what I want. you know, and that would be good. And I've gotten it in comics before. I've gotten it kind of in animated before, but I've never gotten it on screen. And that's kind of what I want, because I think that would be an interesting film where we get to kind of see Superman wrestling with what he's going through morally, internally. But if you dedicate, you know, 25%, 50% of the film to action, you're never going to get that, you know, satisfactorily.
So, yeah, just hearing you talk about that really clarified for me that actually it's really hard to blame James Gunn for this, because he made the movie that he needed to make, in that it's a real statement piece for like how he's going to handle the DC universe. And it would have been a mistake to do that, making the kind of Superman film that I'm talking about, that I'm talking about wanting to see. So really, he's just smuggled a kind of Justice League prequel into something that he called a Superman film so that people would go and see it.
Justice Gang, such a weird
Justice
name.
Gang is a Justice League prequel, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard to be mad. So it's maybe a bit of trickery, but it's hard to be mad. It's only superficially a Superman film, I guess, is the main takeaway. But it's still very, very good. Like, that's the only bad thing that I really have to say about it, is that there's a couple. Firstly, it tries to do too much. Absolutely tries to do too much. And I don't think there was any reason for the introduction to be as confusing as it was. Like, I struggled to follow along that entire wall of
You found text. It confusing? Yeah. Really?
I appreciated it.
What it was I felt like I was watching text describing a bit of the movie that we should have been watching. So, like, I felt like I wanted to see someone say the things in a news interview or something, you know, have people establish on screen some of these facts and relationships. But I'm honestly surprised that none of you seem to care, because it was like, it bothered me having to inhale a lot of lore.
Anything did not have another origin story. And I guess, this is another one. That was exactly what I was thinking too.
The origin story I don't care about, but it's all the stuff like they established, like the war that was going on in text. And they said, Lex Luthor has been doing this and that. And like, this is the first time Superman has lost a fight. And it just seemed like a lot.
Yeah.
Again, it's another thing. We had the same thing with the new Spider-Man. Did we with the new Spider-Man? I'm forgetting now when the Tom Holland was introduced. There wasn't really an origin, right?
No, in Civil War, you just kind of jump into him being Spider-Man.
And so if we're not going to keep doing origin stories, then we have to have some way to get past that. And I think that given how long the movie already was, I thought this was a perfectly fine choice. You're choosing between bad options. I would love to just have everything has to actually be canon in some way. Like, that's what would be most narratively satisfying for me. But I understand that comics in general, given the long publication history and the different media that they appear and the way the film works, we're not going to get that. So instead we have this, we've all been forced to, now Marvel is going to do the same thing with us, that like, yeah, if you want to say it's all real somehow, there's a multiverse, Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just legends. These are just things that people thought maybe happened, but probably didn't happen. And we're just all going to have to get our heads around that.
Can we talk about Lex Luthor?
Yes, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Because I struggled with this. What makes him a worthy opponent to Superman, do you think?
Oh, what an excellent question. Another excellent essay question.
Look at you, Sarah. Look at you.
It's the beach.
How you set up Lex Luthor is every bit as important in a Superman story as to how you set up Superman. The important thing is there are many, many different ways to set up Lex Luthor, because originally he was, like, people make fun of the Gene Hackman version of Lex Luthor, but it's really the most faithful to the original source material, because he's just so great.
He's my favorite.
Yeah, he's just a villain of the week, like, mad,
come on,
bad
Sarah,
criminal
some nostalgia
genius
going
who,
on with you, man. You're a little too nostalgic for me.
It's true.
Who, like, comes up with wacky schemes that Superman has to foil. So he just has to be the opposite of what Superman is, really. Or he just has to be something which is opposed to something that Superman is in favor of. And Jesse Eisenberg was really good in the role. I don't think the character of Lex that they set up in those movies really worked, because him and Superman weren't terribly opposed, like, on key questions. But the Nicholas Holt version...
Are you serious, Al? Of course they were. I'm not going back into Superman. Spider-Man is still... Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I know what you... It's probably too much. But yeah, I love the Nicholas Holt portrayal of Lex Luthor. The motivations weren't quite clear enough, though. Like, you need to really pick a lane with the Lex Luthor. And my favorite version of the Lex Luthor motivation is Superman is bad for us as a species. And this is, they kind of got to this bit.
Yeah, they kind of got there.
Yeah, I thought so too.
With the new one. It's like Superman is bad for us as a species. This was in a speech, wasn't it? That I, Lex Luthor, because I am a self-made human man, represent the best of humanity. And you are a stulting influence on us culturally. And that's like the kind of Nietzschean thing, right? That's the kind of good version of the Lex Luthor motivation, I think. You can give him whatever motivation you like, as long as it lines up properly with Superman.
It's because they were childhood friends, and he kept the secret for too long. And
that too.
Okay.
I don't even mind that. Like, you do that.
I really liked the Michael Rosenbaum Smallville version of that. I spent a lot of time. I didn't quite get to the end of Smallville, but in fact, he and most of the other actors jumped ship from that show, and now it's ruined by Nixium.
And that show might have jumped the shark as well. Anyway, what I really liked about this particular Lex Luthor, the Nicholas Holt one, is that he came off as like a tech bro next Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
And I think, like, the more I'm thinking about this, the more I think Superman says more about the culture out of which it comes than about Superman. Like, that's what I'm beginning to pick up on, is that, and I think Sarah kind of already made this point, so I'm going to give Sarah all the credit here, is that the 80s Superman, 70s Superman is very much 80s, 70s. Then there's a 2001, then there's a 2010 that's kind of in the wake, kind of still of 9/11 in a way. And then there's this one. So this one is very much responding to the time. Like, I read Lex Luthor is like Elon Musk-esque, right?
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that he does all this stuff behind the scenes. And then when it comes out that he's doing all this bad stuff behind the scenes, he then breaks down emotionally. That's saying something about that kind of character, right? And I really enjoyed that. I don't think James Gunn even tries to hide that he's trying to make this an Elon Musk kind of character, right? And that's what's really interesting to me. I really liked his Lex Luthor. I really liked it. Even though it was a little muddled at times, but I really liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was that idea, that tech idea of what is it, like go fast and break things or something like that. We'll worry about it later.
Yeah, yeah.
And which is kind of the opposite of that sense of responsibility that Superman feels. You know, there's a really, really good contrast there.
I also really, just talking about Lex, it's no near as important an observation, but I love that they are silly enough that, like, sure, Lex Luthor's opened a pocket dimension and he's using it as a prison and we're just going to have a jailbreak. See that? Let's not waste any time establishing
very
how that's
silly,
possible.
But so
yes,
fun.
Let's just take it for granted.
Let's just go.
That's great.
But that's very comic booky, though. That's the kind of stuff that you would find in comic books.
Sure.
It's unapologetically silly, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really essential tone that you have to take in Superman. Let's have the robots. Let's have the dog.
And pretty well aligned in real life.
I want to refer folks to our May 2021 episode, Made for Love and Other Silicon Villainy, before any of you join, where we actually did the tech bro as like the modern kind of villain. So it's only that Elon just is so good at it. And he jumps, he took this heel
He's
turn.
He's the face right now.
He took this heel turn in supporting Trump and walking into that role. But this is something that we have been really concerned with for, you know, a decade plus.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. With Elon, it's really interesting, though, how he is doing. His projects are the most supervillainy project. Like, he's the one who's trying to develop brain implants to give people psychic powers. He's the one who's, like, launching spaceships and, like, creating secret colonies.
Well, that's it. Like, everyone who's in power right now is, like, a supervillain. We are putting people in cages who don't deserve to be there. We are saying things like, companies are people. You know, corporations are people, too. No, they're not.
Oh, Sarah, your East Coast liberal bias is coming through.
Yeah.
Does anybody have crypto thoughts? I really enjoyed crypto. I don't know what to say, man. I liked it. And I really enjoyed that they actually brought this character into an actual film, because it's always been there, but they never brought it in. And I thought crypto needed some training, but I really enjoyed crypto.
I love the payoff for crypto, the fact that he was looking after him for Supergirl. Also, really, like, I know that I read some people with very justifiable caution about the Party Girl, Valley Girl, Supergirl take. But I'm really excited about it.
I'm really interested about what that film's going to be like. I'm kind of scared. I don't know what to expect from that.
Had you seen the articles about in the 1980s, Lex Luthor was explicitly redesigned to resemble Donald Trump. This is not a made up thing. You can, wow. But this kind of came up that he had posted him an AI picture. Trump had posted of himself as Superman, or, you know, he had redistributed or something like that. And so it was pointed out that, so I only saw like the four panels of that, but there's something, to have somebody whose power is to basically be the super genius, but then reinterpret it like that. I mean, I guess the Kingpin is a better example.
He's a better analogy for Trump.
Yeah. Yes. Or Donald Trump was like made into the Kingpin, I think, for this version is what that means. Yeah. Even in the All-Star Superman that you referred us to, Al, like he's this beef, this giant slab of beef in a way that I don't feel like Lex is supposed to be, but maybe that's just starting in the 90s. I don't know that everybody had to be a giant muscly.
Yeah, the 90s were a weird.
He's not
time.
A giant slab of beef in All-Star, is he? But he's muscly. Yeah. He's beefcake guy. Yeah.
He's kind of buff. He's kind of buff.
Yeah.
Was Crypto in the comics?
Yeah, so Crypto's an artifact of the Golden Age. He's been around for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Because it's a kid's comic.
It's a kid's comic. So yeah, okay. I was thinking it probably was. Did anybody watch any of the 1950s shows, Superman shows, catch any of those?
Didn't have time, but yeah, tell us about it.
Josh and I watched a couple of them, and it's those actually feel like a comic strip because they're so serialized and they're silly and just meant to be fun and not taken seriously. But I didn't see thematically anything particularly deep going on in those 1950s shows, but it just may have been a flaw about myself as a viewer, but they're fun.
There was nothing deep.
There's nothing deep going on in most of Superman storytelling, especially. But like Lawrence said earlier, that one of the most important things about Superman is that he reflects like the time that he's in, and like the way Superman shows up in the culture is very, very revealing in a kind of media criticism kind of way. Because, yeah, in the 50s, when especially in kids' media, he's there as someone who can be, like, reassuringly present. Like, in a generation of absent and damaged fathers, he was there for the children in that generation. Then the 60s and 70s, the whole American way, like, it became a kind of a corrective to state power. Like, in the 40s and 50s, he was an assertion of state power. In the 60s and 70s, it became a corrective of state power. Then in the 80s, postmodernism happened, and so we had to ask the question, like, what is Superman anyway? Is he really a good thing?
Who watches The Watchers?
Who watches The Watchers, all that. And then in the 90s were just a huge mistake culture releases, so some really weird stuff happened. And then...
Sir!
We tried. I'm joking. But in the comics, at least, that Superman in the 90s was not good. Basically, because, for really interesting reasons, because the 80s happened, and like we had Watchmen and we had Frank Miller, and they made a lot of very good points, and it took everyone a really long time to figure out how to actually respond to that and just make Superman again. So people spent a really long time trying to make Superman awkwardly weird and cool in the 90s, trying to make him different so he wouldn't be boring anymore. And that resulted in some...
Our Dean Cain version.
Well, the death... Does anyone remember the death of Superman, the event?
Oh, I do. The big comic event.
It made the news for... like weeks in the 90s.
Yeah, I do remember.
It was a bad mistake because he died for like a few weeks and then came back, and then there were three different Supermen for a while, and we had to figure out which was the real one. And that's just like the wrong way to react. But it's interesting that just a re-understanding or a recontextualizing of Superman as a kind of culturally problematic icon that we got in the 80s like had the kind of impact where... Like people, he'd been the biggest superhero in the world for decades, and then suddenly no one knows what to do with him because it feels like he's been culturally undermined. And we're still suffering from the consequences of that. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why it's so hard to do Superman now, is because he's been postmodernized. And what do you do with that Superman if you have a sense of irony?
Well, you have him haunted like the Sentry. You have him completely undermined by his own, his power to do evil. Yeah, so I had mentioned Invincible. That's another sort of indie take on Superman. You know, technically the sort of son of Superman is the actual Invincible character, but that his dad is, and you find out just like in this movie, pretty quickly in Invincible that the father was actually sent to this planet to dominate it. And once this sort of comes out, then he murders the rest of the Justice League in very disgusting fashion in front of, you know, it's not called the Justice League, obviously, but yeah, so it's a fun take. Al, what did you draw? Did you get up to date on that? I didn't have time to get up to date on that, but I've read a lot of the comic.
I love the first series, and it's great. I also love The Boys and various other.
Oh yeah, I liked it too.
I like that kind of Superman commentary when it's done well. I think he is an idea that should be played with, but that's one of the reasons I love him so much. Is he's that there's just not that many cultural phenomena who are that kind of durable. He's like Sherlock Holmes level present.
I'm looking up horror movie where kid Superman turns evil. Brightburn. That's the name of another one of these things where
I actually enjoyed that film.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, I like that.
It was unnecessarily gory, but I kind of enjoyed it though.
Yeah. Yeah, the Homelander, well, so what is his weakness is just that he's insecure, right? Because no one really likes him for him. Like you're just alienated by your very power from everyone. That they're touching you with kid gloves, or they're afraid of you. Wouldn't absolute power corrupt absolutely? These are all good points.
Yeah, what if Superman were an insecure fascist? Like that'd be pretty bad, right?
And a sociopath. Yeah.
I didn't reread Red Son. That's another one you recommended. Of like, instead of the American way, mm-hmm. he's born in Russia, and so he obeys Russian doctrine. I don't remember exactly how that plays out, or whether it has anything fun to say about.
Some of the fun stuff is in the alternative history, because the Soviet Union like thrives and doesn't collapse because Superman's there to help them all out. But ultimately the story it tells is about how Superman resists the corrupting influence of communist dictatorship in the end, and like becomes aligned with like freedom just by like stemming from his morality or something. Like that the moral story of Red Son isn't really as interesting as just the idea of playing with like, what if Superman wasn't an American way? What if he had a different way? Probably the more interesting thing is like, by telling it differently, it kind of makes explicit a lot of the underlying, you know, American assumptions that are implanted into the character.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we gotta hit the home stretch here. I want to dwell on Superman 1 just a little bit, because I feel I'm very nostalgic about it, but like I didn't remember like how peaceful the music, it's got that John Williams music, and the whole beginning where they're sending him up, and even though the cheesy effects of the like the spinning diamond that captures the bad guys and into the Phantom Zone, that's like remarkably emotionally effective given that it's a spinning diamond. Like given what an easy effect that is of having people standing behind a screen yelling. So I just sort of then thought Richard Donner is all about sort of purity and upliftingness, and anything that's cheesy in Superman 2 must have been added by Richard Lester, who was a comic. He did A Hard Day's Night. Like he was adding slapstick and stuff like this. But in the Richard Donner version is at the end of Superman 2, when he had been depowered earlier, he gets beat up by a bully. And so he like goes back, and in both versions, this is not a Richard Lester edition, like takes out the trash. And like, should Superman with his absolute power be putting bullies in their place, and shouldn't he be morally above that? I just felt disappointed in Richard Donner for stooping for to such that things.
Scene in. Yeah,
Lawrence is disappointed with my being concerned about this.
I mean, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I mean, you know, I have nothing deep to say about it. I mean, would Superman actually do something like that? Probably not. But was it fun to watch? Absolutely.
Yes. That's what it boils down to for me.
Yeah.
Yes. So maybe that's the summary. All the questioning in the 80s and the gritty version of Superman, like there's a time and a place for that. But Superman is supposed to be positive and fun. And that's what makes it actually worth doing. Otherwise, like, just don't even bother. That seemed to be, Al, what you were gesturing toward.
He's a great symbol of hope. And even though I am, you know, as skeptical, if not more skeptical of like American imperialism than the next person, I think there is a lot to be said for truth, justice, and the American way as Superman embodies it. And I really enjoy having him around.
Well, all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for being super with us. Up, up, and away.
That is so corny. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.